Hi, guys, and welcome to the Dead by Tomorrow podcast. My name is Daniel Winter, and my co-host is Andrew Monroe. In each episode, Andrew and I will explore topics that you should think about before you die. We encourage you to remember that some tomorrow will be your last, so each day could be your final chance to really live.
For those of you who keep up on the podcast as a regular standard, like, you know, every new episode you're on it, I hope this is a happy surprise for you. We've got our standard challenge interview. Interview is not the right word. Sorry, Daniel. This is not an interview. This is a conversation. Our standard challenge conversation we've been doing this year right after the last episode. So you should be getting a double whammy within like less than a week of each other. So congratulations for everybody else who's like, what is Andrew going on about? Ignore all of that. Welcome back to the show. We're really happy you're here. And Daniel, I'm glad to have you back on. I missed you with the interview with Larry, but here we are at the end of our challenge on language learning and ready to jump into the next challenge. So you can't throw me under the bus. I completely fell apart on this challenge. So you want to start there?
Yo no hablo español. Hola and bienvenido a Dead by Tomorrow. Mi nombre Daniel y conmigo es mi amigo Andrew. Andrew, ¿cómo está?
Yo estoy bien. Yo no tengo un Hispanic acento. I just wanted to say I really liked your Hispanic accent you're going whenever you're speaking Spanish there. My Spanish is a little rusty. Mi español es muy mal. No bien.
¿Por qué?
Fine, let's get into this. So, I logged two practice sessions of Spanish, and that was it for July / the first week of August. And it is shameful, and I'm embarrassed, and I'm sorry to you and to everybody who might have cared about seeing some success in this challenge for me. I was pretty excited about it at the beginning when we recorded the last episode, and I fell for the classic blunder of I did not schedule when I was going to be doing my Spanish. I didn't say, hey, this is, you know, you're doing this every morning, you're going to do this at lunch, you're going to do this after dinner, right before bed, like I usually do when I'm trying to accomplish something. I didn't plan it out. And as it fell apart, I kept not planning out, like, oh, I'll figure out how to get this fit in. And then that momentum just kept going and going. That the inertia is probably a better word of not doing it. And I let just about everything else. And it was an exciting month. There's a lot going on. So I had that to fall back on to try to take away from my guilt. But in the end, I didn't make time. And I just completely screwed up and touched my app twice and barely got past the, it might've been like 3 or 4 times, honestly, but like, I think 2 of them barely count. Didn't get anything done. Barely got through like the, hey, where are you at in Spanish? I was like, I've got si, and I've got hola, and I have bien, and, you know, things like that. I've got no, because that one's an easy one. It's the same. So, yeah. If there was a shame parade, this is the moment that I need to go walking through the streets with a lady chasing me with a bell.
It's muy triste.
How did it go for you? Obviously, you're feeling confident on your Spanish. I can't tell if you're saying anything right. You're using words I don't know.
I was trying to decide if I could just make my way through saying Spanish phrases throughout and kind of punting the ball back your way, but I'm not quite to that level of proficiency. I would say the month went fairly well. I had one day that I didn't log at least one Duolingo practice session. Duolingo, like we talked about at the beginning, is something I've been doing fairly regularly and have been building up a fair amount of vocab words. And so it's challenging to think about a response in Spanish and reply to things. Like I had a couple things that I I could have said back at you, but it wouldn't have been a very cohesive conversation. So that's a challenge. I feel like I'm getting better at being able to hear things and comprehend, but actual conversation is challenging. It reminds me a little bit of my daughter, who is almost two. She can understand quite a bit of things that we're saying to her, but she has her like one or two word response things where she can just say those things and it gets us to do things. So I could probably be like a child amongst a Spanish family and get myself fed and find the bathroom and some of those types of things. But that's about the extent of it. So yeah, Duolingo has gone well. I'm a fan of it. Oddly enough, they actually just pushed what seems like a pretty major update to their app this morning. I was logging in and doing a little bit of Spanish before this. Also watching Dora. So just really going hard on the language immersion, right? But Duolingo
is great, honestly. That's a great move.
Yeah. Right. Riley loves it. Dora and Blippi are her two shows. So Duolingo, it's a free app. It's like all free apps in that they constantly spam you trying to do their premium version. But they have different units and lessons and things like that. And so as you go through it, it kind of starts more entry level and gets a little more advanced and as you go, and you can do a lesson like the very first one is about the basics, like basic sentences, you know, how to say hello and some of those types of things. And when you complete a lesson, it gives you progress towards sort of mastering the words and the concepts within that lesson. And so you can, if you want, you can just kind of do the lesson and then go to the next lesson, or you can repeat that lesson up to, I think it's, I don't know how many times, it's quite a few times. And then at that point you kind of gold star it, and then you've basically mastered that and you can kind of move on. And then each day that you log in as well, it will show you lessons that, you know, it goes from being golden and all nice and complete to looking broken. And that says, hey, it's probably time for you to do a little refresher and just make sure that these words are still fresh for you. So that was kind of my approach, was I would each day, I would try to go through and fix my broken lessons, do my refreshers. And those are what I'll call freebies, because again, it's a free app, but it gives you hearts, which is how many mistakes you can make before it's like, okay, you're done with your Spanish today, unless you're going to pay us more money. But you can always go do refreshers. Doesn't require any hearts. It's doing the new lessons that you kind of have to do well if you want to keep doing lessons. So I'll do my refreshers, and then I would try to do whatever the furthest along lesson was that I was trying to master. And then if I really did well, then I would go and kind of look at the furthest thing along the path that was just like totally brand new and would do like a first new lesson. So on really good days, I might hit 4 lessons in a day. On days where it's like, okay, I'm trying to at least, you know, grease the groove here, I would at least hit my refresher lesson for the day.
Greasing the groove. I love that. That is a concept that everybody should be thinking about all the time. Like, you always want to be greasing that groove if you're working on something. I'm glad you said that. That's a great concept that I usually think about when I'm working out or something like that, but it really applies to Spanish. So I want to throw my 2 cents in as well, because you killed it on Duolingo and it's great. I'm not going to make excuses again on why I fell apart, but I wanted to try something else. We've used Duolingo in the past and really liked it. But I was like, hey, there's this Babbel Plus thing. I'd used it briefly like 6 or 7 months ago when it first came out. It was great. And maybe it's still a great app. I don't know. But that was one of the run-ins is when I jumped into it finally. The paywall is severe. So I'm not going to say like expensive severe, which I do think it kind of is that. I think it's like $200 a year or something, or $150 a year for the premium subscription. Okay, well, like on Duolingo, you can get really far without the premium subscription. On Babbel, I could do like 5 minutes a day, and that was it. That was all it let me do. It was like, all right, you did your 2 lessons for the day. We've decided, you know, Olaf, we'll see you tomorrow unless you want to buy the premium. And I was like, wait, help. I need more. And it didn't work. And then I was going to try and swap back to Duolingo and again, I fell apart. But I was really excited about Babbel Plus, and maybe I just kind of derped out on it. But from what I could see, it was basically non-functional in what you needed to do if you didn't pay for the premium subscription. And the premium is definitely a premium price. So kind of disappointing. I was really excited about it.
Gotcha. Well,
did you happen to, did you happen to find any other tools out there that helped, like, you know, watching Dora is, I think, super clever. Tim Ferriss was really big into reading like some of your favorite books, going and finding like maybe easier to read books. Lord of the Rings might not be the best option, but some of the easier books that you really, really enjoyed, like The Little Prince or something like that in Spanish, and then practicing translating the book as you're reading it. Obviously, I don't think you did that. Was there anything else besides Duolingo that you were like, hey, this was a really good adder to greasing that groove, or something that maybe you didn't have time for that you think would have really helped?
Yeah, Duolingo was definitely the main tool. Dora, they actually speak a surprisingly little amount of Spanish in Dora, but my daughter and I have watched Dora many, many mornings. And then something I didn't do a ton of this month, I've done in the past, is I do have on my Bible app, I have a Spanish version of the Bible downloaded. So there have been times that I've gone and read some of the scripture I know most well and kind of tried to stumble through and read some of that in Spanish. That's definitely interesting. So I haven't tried to read any other books, but that is one. We did sing one of our worship songs in Spanish at church during the month, so I'll count that one as well.
I think favorite songs would be a great move. Like, hey, yeah, Here's your favorite song in Spanish. That's awesome, because that's catchy. You're getting that mnemonic, whatever you want to call it, that music that gets stuck in your head. So just throwing that out there. That's awesome. I never thought of that.
Music is hard, I will say, because every now and then if I get in the car, especially if I like get in after, you know, a rental or somebody's driven the car who is a Spanish speaker and they're listening to Spanish radio, I usually don't turn it immediately off. I will listen for a little bit. And I don't know about you. Actually, I feel like this is true of you, but lyrics are hard enough for English songs. Like, how many lyrics to songs do you actually know and pick up and hear? So that's what I'll say about Spanish music. There are definitely little words I can pick up where I'm like, oh, he's talking about his heart. Oh, he's saying, like, I am something about you. That's what's a little bit hard with music. The talk portions, it is a little bit easier to somewhat follow on that. And then, you know, when out in different places, if there was a sign or something like that, or a menu where it has English and Spanish, I would typically always kind of look at the Spanish side, challenge myself and say, hey, can I figure out what's being said here? And then like look back at the English side and be like, oh yeah, I was close. And okay, like that's what that one word was that I couldn't figure out.
Well, that's exactly the point of these kind of challenges is, you know, we're wanting to push ourselves on this front. Again, I'm not going to stop beating myself up on this, especially at least during this episode. I'm really disappointed in what I did this July. But that's kind of the goals. It's not just like, hey, build out these 15 minutes every day to practice Spanish. It's also look for the opportunities where you can do the little stuff. We've talked about this in the book. We've talked about this in the podcast before. Find the little moments that you can just keep adding these, just add to that pile of, hey, I practice Spanish. Is there something in Spanish? Is there a sign? Can you read that sign first and then see if you got it right on the English translation? Looking for those little tiny opportunities to incrementally grow is exactly what the goal is here. See what you can do for 30 days. So that's great. I also talked to one of our guys in a weird coincidence yesterday. We had a bunch of the field techs not scheduled to be in the field because they're supposed to build a house at Joseph's house, or build a shed. That sounds better. Build a shed at Joseph's house, and he ended up not wanting to mess with it. So they got stuck with me and me preaching at them about things I cared about. a hint. I was talking to one of the guys and he's like, yeah, by the way, I'm going to have to change up the schedule. I have to take Spanish this semester. And like, it's not online. I have to go to class and it's at this certain time. And like, if I don't take it this semester, it pushes my graduation out like a whole year. I don't want that. I was like, no, man, I get it. It's totally fine. And he was like, yeah, it's silly. Like, I'm already really good at Spanish because he actually listens to audiobooks and podcasts. He's got like one specific one that is basically this learning Spanish story driven thing. I'll have to try and figure out what it was from him, but basically he listens to this story in Spanish and then it like goes back and talks about it in English. And so it was just kind of a cool concept, another tool to put in the belt if you're trying to learn a language. I'll find those kind of audio driven devices that aren't necessary Duolingo, where you're just listening and absorbing. And I think it helps what you talked about at the beginning there. Understanding the language is really important at first. Actually generating your own phrases in a different language is really difficult. That's a whole different thing. That's going to require a lot of practice, but if you can get to that point where you at least understand it, that's a pretty good milestone.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think our summary of takeaway on Spanish is Babbel Plus, maybe not the best option if you're trying to, you know, do some entry level. Definitely stick with Duolingo. There's a lot that you can do without having to pay anything. And even if you do want to do their premium, I don't know how much it is, but I don't think it's very expensive. They also will throw some trials at you your way so you can try that out. So Duolingo is a great option. And then just finding the little ways to try to make it more a part of your day-to-day routine, I think, really make a big difference is what we learned from Spanish.
Yeah. Well, and man, we're in Texas. It's easy to practice in a day-to-day situation. you're not getting out much if you're not finding those opportunities. But yeah, it was good. I'm sorry again to everyone, including Daniel, that I failed you guys. I'm going to do better on this next challenge. So presence. We're going to be doing being present this August, I guess we can call it. We don't exactly match up with the months. We're like slowly adding like an extra day or so per month. At some point, maybe by December, we'll like be like half in December, half in January or something. But we're going to be doing being present. So, Daniel, this was kind of your idea. You want to drop the knowledge on kind of how this is going to work for us?
Yeah. The idea that I sent your way, and I'm going to say that you rebranded it as present, so you may have to explain some of the thought process behind that. But basically what we're going to do is, first of all, we're going to do a food journal. I've never done a food journal before, so I'm actually kind of interested to see when I look back at, you know, a week and especially full month, just to kind of see, all right, like what were some of my trends in terms of things that I eat most often. I'm going to try to keep track of roughly time of day too, because I would be interested to see, like, am I habitually eating something that is not great after this time at night? Or if I do that, do I tend to not feel as great? So some of those types of things. And that's something I've talked to a few people about, food, and a lot of the conversation comes up around when I say that, you know, I don't like Cane's as much as I used to. Or even yesterday, Hillary got some Wendy's for me for lunch because we were just kind of all over the place. And I used to eat Wendy's probably 4 to 5 times a week in college. No lie. Like legitimately at least that much. And I ate it yesterday. I just felt blah all day. I was like, fast food's not my thing anymore. And I think that it probably never necessarily was, but I just probably didn't pay a lot of attention to how I felt and attributing that to food. So I'm excited to do a food journal for that. And I've got a little bit more self-discipline and a little bit more respect for my body now. So if I notice that there's something that is really messing with me, I think it'll be a good chance to cut that out. And then the other piece of it that we're going to do, that's just, I think it'll be a little bit more fun, because even though I'm interested in food journal, I don't think it'll be all that fun, is taking a picture each day and maybe typing up a quick little note about that. So picture journal, food journal. It'll be interesting to be able to kind of look back at the month and see, what did I eat? You know, what were things that I was doing this month that seemed picture worthy?
So before I jump into the present stuff, I want to talk about what you're saying there. So the food journal thing, I think about this too much, especially for how poorly I eat. So I've got three things for you, three topics I'm going to try and rapid fire on you. First, I don't think we talked about this very much, but most of July while I was, again, failing, it's a failure because I didn't attempt. It's not a failure because I wasn't successful at learning Spanish. It's a failure because I didn't try. That's where I'm really bugged about this. So anyways, enough on that. I had a continuous glucose monitor for most of July. I don't know if you even knew that. Did we ever talk about that?
A little bit, because you talked about how much alcohol messed with you.
Mm-hmm. So it was really cool. I didn't think it'd be something that would necessarily come up on the podcast because, you know, we were doing Spanish and we didn't really have the seventh challenge, this food one, until last night at, you know, what is today, the sixth. So, you know, the night of the fifth, we were like, hey, we should do this challenge. And I've not had the glucose monitor for about 2 weeks now, almost. It was like right at the end of July. So that was really kind of made me more mindful of what I was eating. Unfortunately, I did a lot of travel while I was wearing this monitor, and travel to me almost always is specifically, at least enjoying travel, specifically related to food to me. So I missed the boat on some of this stuff, but just seeing how different foods, and especially something like canes, or my weakness is ice cream, which I know you're not into, which it's still upsetting to me, but the ice cream and canes or alcohol, and the way some of these things interacted with my body was just wild. Or some of the stuff that I expect that would be like really kind of bad for me didn't have huge effects, like street tacos. Street tacos were pretty chill on the glucose monitor, at least, not a huge reaction. Protein shakes or like just chicken, zero reaction. Like I still eat actual protein and, you know, a lot of other stuff, that'd be pretty good. Sticky rice or naan, like with some Indian food, through the roof. It was worse than ice cream in some instances. alcohol, we talked about it, but just in case anybody's curious about food stuff as well. The alcohol itself didn't blunt it, or didn't spike the glucose, because I don't really drink like really sugary drinks. I'm drinking, it's like wine or maybe, you know, like just whiskey or whatever. But the next day, my average glucose level would be elevated for like almost 24 hours. So let's say I had a drink or two Thursday night, but I ate healthy. Okay, nothing terrible happened Thursday. Little bit of a raise in my, you know, after the drinks, I'd be a little raised and steady there. But the next day, I'd have this kind of elevated baseline. And whenever I had something that might not have spiked it as much the day before, now that I had the alcohol the night before, it would cause this just weirdly aggressive spike in what my glucose response was to some of these foods that might not have been as aggressive if I hadn't drank. So that was pretty interesting. I'm not necessarily recommending this for the challenge. It kind of would go hand in hand maybe, but it's pretty expensive. And so it's hard to recommend it. And kind of makes sense. So there's that. Second part of this, and another coincidence, I did that Made For. Do you remember me talking about Made For maybe a year ago?
I don't remember Made For.
Okay. So it was this program. I've been meaning to do like a really long blog post series on it. And what's interesting, I guess they didn't make it. Like they're shutting down their shop as of like 2 weeks ago. But it was this kind of expensive as well. I really have a thing with spending too much money on weird stuff. But there's this guy named Andrew Hubbard, I think. He pops up all over. Oh, you should know who I'm talking about. You're doing your brain stuff. Andrew is one of the guys that is involved in that study that you're doing on the brain study that you've been doing for this last year. If I remember, I'm pretty sure he is on the board that is helping run that brain study you're doing. So he's like the pop culture brain psychology guy running around right now. He's pretty young. I think he's in his like early 40s, but everybody uses him if they need a cutting edge semi-celebrity scientist guy to come help build a program or work with them or advise them on things related to psychology. He is pretty ubiquitous in interesting psychology stuff. So, and I might be butchering his last name, but we'll have him in the show notes now. So he paired with the guy who founded Toms, whose name I've also forgotten. And the two of them created this program called Madeform. Basically, the guy that founded Toms made all this money and he got depressed. And he was out surfing at a retreat or something and met this other guy. And then they grabbed Hubbard to come help him. And the three of them made this program that is supposed to be basically a brain grease the groove kind of thing where you follow all these different steps. And at the end of this, like 12 months, you're supposed to have a dialed in like habit. Like it's this stacked habit system where you have all these really good habits are all stacked together and it's supposed to make you a better person. And I completely agree with this. I'm using, you know, gray language here, but I think what they did was a really good product. I think it was a really good system, so much so that when I saw they were going out of sale or out of business or closing the shop down, I went ahead and bought all of the books they had. They're like sitting in my car right now in the box they came in like 2 or 3 days ago, because I was like, I don't want to lose all of this cool research they had, because at the beginning of each month, they'd give you this little book and say like, hey, here's your challenge, read this stuff. And it's kind of what I base some of what we've been doing on. These challenges we've been doing was a year and a half ago when I did this, I really enjoyed that monthly habit kind of building. So all of that verbal vomit equals one of the things they did was a food journal. One of the months was food tracking. And so I did similar to this during that time and tried to do food tracking. And of all the challenges they had, that was one of the ones that was hardest for me, because I really just struggled with actually writing it down. And I'm going to try and be better this month on it. So I need accountability here. But one of the things that I'd have trouble with is I was okay with like, oh, I had a protein shake, I'd write that down. If I had a good meal, I'd write it down. But when I went to Cane's or whenever I went and got that pizza or got ice cream and, you know, kind of did things that in my mind, I was like, well, I shouldn't have done that. It was a lot harder for me to write it down and keep track of it and really focus on it. And it wasn't even like I was intentionally like, ooh, I'm embarrassed that I went and ate healthy. I would just, it wasn't a part of the plan of what I was doing. And so I wouldn't actually like put two and two together, be like, hey, you ate something, you need to write it down. In my mind, I was keeping a food journal and eating healthy. And whenever I didn't eat healthy, it was a separate instance of what I was working on. So my brain just wouldn't even like think about like, hey, you need to write this down in your food journal. I'd go have ice cream. The next day, I'm like, oh, I'm going to write down my protein shake this morning for the food journal. I keep going. So I'm pretty excited. I'm going to bust out that book and I'll probably put some links on it or something related to it, send you some pictures, because they had some really good science in it. I'll try and incorporate it at least whenever we finish this challenge up and see if we matched up with the science from Madeform. So pretty excited there. My final third thing that I'm trying to rapid fire you and I'm not doing a very good job on. There's this guy who got me excited about this kind of stuff and why I'm so excited for this challenge. And he was on Tim Ferriss, who has come up twice today. And I really like Tim Ferriss. So the Chasing Bobby Fischer guy, whose name I've forgotten, he did this thing where he went and started doing a food journal. He was just like, hey, does this food make me happy? Like, do I feel good? It's like the Wendy's thing you're talking about. Hey, I ate a Wendy's hamburger. Do I feel good? Do I feel bad? Do I feel neutral? And so he just used this really simple system and he'd put, you know, food down, yes, no, maybe. And as he progressed through this very simple food journal and everything he ate, he started eliminating anything that if afterwards he's like, hey, I didn't feel great after that, and started eliminating it. He ended up on this diet of like, in his case, and I'm not sure if this applies to all humans. I don't know. I wasn't there. So grain of salt with this, it's hard to believe, but he ended up on this diet supposedly of basically like a couple pounds of apples a day and some leafy greens and stuff like that. It was a really simplistic diet. I think he had some fish every once in a while, but basically was like an apple themed with little bits of protein and little bits of like fruits and veggies on the side that weren't apples. So he's doing this and he's off studying abroad in the UK, I think, and he comes back to the US and he goes to the gym with, I think, his brother. And, you know, he worked out. He's also some kind of karate champion. I can't remember which martial art it is, but he's like a legitimate fitness enthusiast along with being a, you know, grandmaster in chess. And the dude's just phenomenal. I think he's Warren Buffett's life coach, actually, is one of his resume features in modern times currently. So guy's just an amazing person from everything that he says. But he goes to the gym and he, you know, used to work out and he was just like all of us and, you know, move some weight, did that kind of thing. But when he comes back after not working out for a year and eating all these apples, he's like maxing the stacks on the gym equipment without any additional training. And it's hard to believe. I don't know how accurate it is, but that was one of his big arguments in this whole little podcast he did, was he did a food journal and it had these huge, drastic effects on his physical well-being beyond just feeling better about the food he ate, you know, mental acuity, physical strength, all kinds of stuff. It's like this drug. And I don't know what ended up happening. I don't know if he still eats lots of apples. Could have just been a fun little anecdote, but very interesting. So take all three of those together, the glucose monitor, my failed attempt at the Made For challenge that I was really into a year and a half ago, and the Tim Ferriss thing, and I'm pumped about this. Now that I'm monopolizing the microphone anyways, the presence thing. So one of the problems I had with July was I was constantly running, just going and going and going and going. And I've had a couple moments where I'm like, man, I am not being present. I am not paying attention to what I'm doing. I'm eating food to eat food. I'm thinking about the next food I want to eat. I'm thinking about the next activity I want to chase, that kind of stuff. So when Daniel hit me up last night and said, hey, I want to do this kind of thing, I was like, yes, let's do the food journal, but let's do the pictures because we can take it and focus on being present, finding, you know, something beautiful in a moment, taking a picture of it, being present with our food and actually paying attention to it, not just eating because you're hungry or because you think you need to eat some food. They've been big problems for me, especially this summer. And so I'm very excited to kind of shift this into a being mindful and present with the situations I'm in. And so hopefully I'll be able to take these pictures and say, hey, here's a picture of, you know, this pretty flower that I saw when I was out running, or here is a picture of Jasper. There's probably going to be a lot of pictures of Jasper and him, you know, enjoying the moment with me, because Jasper is really good at being present, as most dogs are. and, you know, stuff like that. I think they go hand in hand. It's kind of weird to think about like presents and pictures throughout your day to day and food, but I think marrying the two of them is going to be really interesting and really important and kind of dialing back that rush and busy mindset culture that we kind of have as a population here, and going back to what I think is important, which is really living in the moment and appreciating what's in front of you and not looking ahead to the next meal or the dessert or getting to your next thing. You know, I very rarely get to enjoy my meals because I'm like, oh, I've got to eat real fast so I can go to the next thing. Or, you know, I've been rushing all day, and it just kind of, you follow that inertia that we talked about. You know, if you're rushing and you're trying to move fast and trying to, you know, be busy, then when those moments come up that you shouldn't be, it's hard to dial back, you know, hit the brakes and actually be like, hey, I can pause, breathe, enjoy this dinner. You know, that's tough. So very excited for it. Daniel, thank you for letting me jump on a pedestal there for a while.
Gladly. Yeah. No, I'm excited as well. Excited for both aspects. And a book that I just finished reading was called The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry. So there are definitely things that I'm kind of taking away that help me to have a desire to be more present, to be more in the moment, to, you know, enjoy just sitting and kind of being still. That's a struggle of mine, and I think a lot of it is just sort of being conditioned that if you're doing that, you're wasting time, you're being lazy, whatever it is. But then understanding that there's actually restfulness that exists in the stillness, the quietness, some of that simplicity. It's really good. So it's a great book. It's very sort of theological. It's written from a pastor, so it's very much takes from Bible concepts, but I really think that regardless of what your faith background is, there's a lot of wisdom in trying to avoid the hurry culture that we live in America.
Mm-hmm. We got to be better than our surroundings. So this will be a good practice for both of us, I think, because we have the same kind of mindsets on this. We're both kind of achievement oriented people. And sometimes that's a good thing. I think it's good to chase that kind of stuff, but sometimes we do it at the expense of moments that shouldn't be oriented that way. And it's not necessary. You don't need to be always trying to, you know, go, go, go. You really got to have those spaces, those breaks that stop the momentum to kind of reset and appreciate where you came from and where you're going and, you know, orient, all that kind of stuff. So it'll be really good. For all you guys listening, we'll have, you know, links in the show notes to keep track with it. Anything you want to ask us, feel free to reach out. And we're really excited about this. So until the next episode, we look forward to connecting with you.